So today I thought it'd be interesting to kind of revisit a topic and look at it from a different lens. One of our most popular episodes is episode 9 on raising entrepreneurial kids. And you and I have been talking more and more lately as our kids get older. We have a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old, and we're talking about topics like how to teach them about money and how to teach them how to value money in the right way. And we've also been talking about how to help the kids find what it is they love, how to help them find their passion, I guess, for lack of a better term. I feel like passion's a bit overused these days, but that's the idea, and that's what we want to start talking about today.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this woman is non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder. Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
This has come up a lot for you lately, as you have really enjoyed beginning to do some coding and more technical work with particularly our oldest son. And you remember what it was like for you to be a kid and start to program an Apple IIe at like age 8, 9. And he's definitely like not as into it as you were, or at least not in the same way. So I know you've been not frustrated, but just like wanting to engage him in sort of the code world, but having him not be as internally motivated or, you know, want to approach it in the same way that you did when you were a kid.
That's right. And at first, you know, I was trying to expose him to coding in the same way that I learned, which was in essence going to the terminal, the console prompt. And I learned BASIC because it was an Apple IIe and that was the middle language you used there. And so I picked up books on teaching Ruby to kids and Python and other things. And it was actually pretty cool for the first day or two, and then he lost interest. And I had already taught him, worked with him through Scratch, which is more of a drag and drop, like pre-typing programming. And you can get pretty sophisticated with it. There's loops and there's ifs and there's all the constructs of it. He loved building the games and playing the games, but he kind of outgrew it. And I was looking for the next step. And it's really taken me a couple years to kind of find that next thing that he gravitated towards. And as I said, I started with the console programming. It was doing a bunch of Python and other stuff. And it didn't really keep his interest. When I asked him if he wanted to do it, he kept saying no. And I kept, you know, realizing that this wasn't something that he loved. He didn't have the same thirst for it that I did, or that I do, I should say. And what I finally stumbled upon, it was actually, you know, I was trying to get him to do some Minecraft mods because he's so into Minecraft, and kept hitting stumbling block. And I bought a book and it was too hard. And, you know, there was just a bunch of stuff that didn't work, but I finally got a video course on it on a recommendation from our mutual friend, Phil Dirksen. And he really wound up digging into that. And I think that the level of creating Minecraft mods, it is easy enough that he can get into it. And he's really enjoyed doing it and then playing it in the game and seeing that, you know, the code he writes and the configurations he changes actually update the way the game is played. And so far, he is hooked big time. And I can totally see that gleam in his eye, you know, that I've had when I'm really diving into some development projects.
Yeah, it's really a problem he's interested in solving, which I think is like a key component where when it was you and the Apple IIe, you were really interested in trying to figure out how to make that machine work or do what you wanted it to do. And so far he's been like interested peripherally in coding and in computers, but like it wasn't really until he needed tools to solve and create something that he was really motivated that he sort of came alive or got to be a little bit on fire about it. And just as an aside, we did actually record an episode about teaching kids to code and some of the resources that we were using at that time. So if that piece of this conversation is interesting to you, that's episode 31, and it's simply called Teaching Kids to Code. But I think going back to this experience with our 10-year-old, it's really taken some flexibility on your part to like wait and not push and just let him find his own interest in this topic or in this field.
Yeah, and it's been a lot of trial and error. And maybe he would have found it on his own. I like to feel that exposing him to a bunch of different things gave him the choice to figure out the one that really resonated with him. And I think we see that with our younger son as well. There's been a lot of trial and error, like, okay, so with our oldest, I taught him to read very quickly and easily. Like, it's just a language his mind speaks, you know?
I'm not sure how much you taught him as much as he just did. He just
taught himself. Yeah, I showed him a few sight words and then he was like, he wasn't even four yet, I think, and he was reading.
There were words around.
Yeah, it was crazy. Whereas our younger one, that's just not his natural inclination. He doesn't interpret things the same way. It isn't such a natural state for him. So that's been kind of a trial and error thing. And now he's just, you know, kind of taking to that. But on the flip side, he takes to like creating and doing art and building things, and we'll spend hours and hours, which our oldest would never do, right? The youngest is just way more inclined to sit there for 2 hours and draw something meticulous and create entire like comic books that are pretty sophisticated for, you know, for his age, at least compared to his older brother.
And to create really intricate Lego worlds. So not just like, I'm going to build a truck, but like a whole series of trucks or a whole scene that involves like multiple vehicles and I don't know, like a whole world that's behind it. So I guess more than us like going on and on about how interesting and weird our kids are is this larger point of really taking a step back as a parent and looking at who your child is and really seeking to help them cultivate those innate skills and interests. And I gotta say, this isn't always easy for me. I actually sort of expected to have like sporty daughters who are like me, who are a little bit wild and competitive and up for a challenge. And that's not at all the children that I ended up with. I have these like artistic intellectual boys. And so I think the challenge for us as parents is to really let go of who we think our kids are going to be and who we are and sort of how we project that onto them and really look at them as a separate entity who is the separate person who is trying to kind of make their way in the world. And then the question is, how do we help them unlock what their sort of innate and like true interests and passions and the things that really excite them? And how do we support that?
Yeah. And I think this, at least for me, it comes down to trying to get a sense, like, over time, you kind of get a sense of your child's personality. And that, it's so funny to say, it's like, you feel like you know what your kid's going to be interested in, but as they get older and even just, you just can't tell is what I found, or at least I can't tell. And it has been, you know, a lot of exposure and trial and error. I think another example of this is in music and is in, from the time they were 3 or 4, having them start to play a stringed instrument, violin and cello, respectively. And I think that at times that's been extremely frustrating for all parties involved, and they don't want to practice and it's a big headache. But I think if you asked either one of them if they wanted to quit, I don't think either of them would want to, even though they don't want to necessarily practice all the time. But when you look back on what they've accomplished as, you know, as a 6 and 10 year old and the number of songs they can play and how well they can play them, I feel like that's also now, you know, they may not long-term be passionate about playing an instrument, but I do think that one of them probably will be. Like, I would guess that this will transform into playing the drums or playing a guitar or just playing something, you know, moving forward, because they have that knowledge. But even if it doesn't, I think that part has helped like teach them the value of investing over time, you know, investing day to day and how much better you can get at something by putting in the work.
Yeah. So I think this is almost a separate point. If the first kind of strategy that we've thought about is to really try to look at our kids and sort of meet them in their interests or at their starting point, I think this sort of second point that you're making when we begin to talk about music is where kind of we as parents initiate an activity that has this larger learning value, which is, I mean, there's so many things with music, but the diligence of practice, the way that things are hard at the beginning, but the more you take it apart and break it down into smaller steps, it gets easier and easier until all of a sudden you've learned a new song. So I think, again, there are so many skills that they're learning, but this is really an activity that they were interested in, but that we sort of initiate and we have really like made them follow through. And all for this larger learning experience of what it's like to do something hard and stick with it and break it down into pieces. And they're not necessarily that passionate about it every day, for sure. They don't wake up and think, wow, I'd really love to practice my violin today. Although there are certainly days when they'll both pick up their instruments and sort of mess around, and that you can tell it's something joyful and delightful and something that they enjoy. But this is where it's our job as parents to provide this sort of structure and follow through and the resources to help them develop these skills, even though it's not like their whim or their passion or the thing that they most want to do. So I guess it's this balance between, hey, what they want matters, and we kind of follow those rabbit trails. But then on the other side of the spectrum, what we want matters, I guess. And the particular skill doesn't matter as much as choosing one thing that we are kind of determined to stick to as a family. And it's not necessarily interest driven at every moment, but it's the stick-to-itiveness that we're instilling in them. So yes, we follow their interests and their rabbit trails and their let's try to make this today. And I'm interested in this kind of coding and not that kind of coding. But then on the other hand, balancing that with like, okay, I get that you don't care about this right now, but you're going to do it anyway kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's been the hard part is it's figuring out how far to push certain things, right? You know, do you sit down and force them to code every day, even if they don't want to? We do that with music. Should you do it with everything? I think with sports, we've seen the same thing, right? Depending on your child, they may gravitate towards sports and they may hate them. And our oldest came to us when he was, maybe probably five. And he said, I've decided I don't want to play any sports that involve balls. And we're like, do you mean like football? Yep. Soccer? Yep. Volleyball? Yep. Baseball. Yeah. I mean, so it was just, he had just come to that conclusion. And I mean, we could fight it. We could force it. We've decided that battle, that particular battle is not worth it with him. There are plenty of other sports he can still do, track, swimming, other things. So that's the challenge, is I think not forcing your own standards of like, I want my child to be a sports star, and force them into that mold, even if they don't necessarily want to do it, but finding other things that they're interested in and like encouraging them towards that, so that they get that feeling of, it's the feeling of accomplishment. It's like self-worth, it's self-confidence. It's, you know, that I know how to do something that's interesting and challenges me.
So yeah, point one, cultivating interest and passion. Point two, cultivating the ability to like follow through and stick to the hard work, even when it's no longer the popular topic or popular idea. And I think one of the other things that has kind of come up for us again more recently is how to chat with our kids about money and sort of help them to understand what it means to be entrepreneurial based on sort of a philosophy of money that we want to instill in them, even from this, you know, very young age. So for example, our six-year-old was putting the dishes away this morning and he's like, Mom, I'd like an allowance. Like, I'd like to earn some money for putting the dishes away. And I was sort of like, you know, you put the dishes away because you use the dishes and because you're part of this family, and I'm not going to pay you to do that. And that's just like what it means to be part of the community that lives in this house, is that you have some jobs that you need to do that we rely on you to do. And that's not something I'm going to pay you for. But you want to talk about ways that you can earn money. Like, let's talk about that.
Yeah. And that's been a big thing. We've tried to encourage them to be more entrepreneurial and to make things that they can sell. Our oldest wrote a book. We've encouraged them to do things like that and to be more entrepreneurial. With that said, given like how busy the kids wind up getting with school and with their instrument practice, with doing their school clubs, and there's just other things that they're into, I think we've realized that we also probably need to cut them a break and give them some type of stipend, essentially. I recently was reading a book on investing, and it was talking about how to teach your kids about money. And one thing they said that I thought was pretty clever was, don't make the allowance weekly, make it monthly, because it forces kids to think longer term. They get a larger sum of money, just like they're going to when they get older and get a job, and that you help them kind of think through how to plan that and think through how to save, and that you consider doing, this is something I really want to do, is considering, you know, 100% matching of anything that they save for a longer period of time. And then, you know, you can help them open a bank account and see interest on it. I mean, these are all things that are valuable to learn when you're young. And I think at a certain point I thought, well, giving them an allowance is teaching them to, you know, value the safety of a salary. I guess that's how it felt, but I don't believe that anymore. Like, I'm realizing now that the kids do probably need the responsibility of that allowance and need to learn how to plan and use it. And then if they want, and this is the beauty of it, is it's like, it teaches them, if they want something above and beyond the quote unquote salary, which is their allowance, that then they do something entrepreneurial, and we don't feel like we have to give them extra money if they don't plan for it.
And we did sit down and make a list of different ways that they could earn extra money, like encouraging them actually to sort of use their musical ability and see if they can get some gigs playing Christmas carols or even do some busking at the farmer's market and things like that, where those are choices that are available and they can take the initiative and we can support that. I encouraged our artistic little guy to like make some handmade cards like for Christmas or for Valentine's Day and try to sell those to the neighbors. And they both have these skills that they can use. So I think, again, helping generate some ideas and also being sort of having the stance of I'm an investor, like I'll help you invest in the paper and the art supplies and the resources that you need. And I will drive you to your cello gig or whatever, but letting them again, take the initiative if they want to earn that extra cash.
One other way that I read, this is a little bit of a tangent, but one other way that I read to teach kids about money was to show them the value of compounding and compound interest so that they think long-term and they don't see the little, you know, 0.5% interest they're getting and think that that's not going to amount to anything. But it's to figure out, you know, how much you want to give them in total. Let's say it's, I don't know, $5 or $10, just an example. And you start them off by saying, all right, I'm going to give you a penny today and then, two pennies tomorrow and 4 the next day and 8 the next day. And show them how to explain to them, like, if you put money in a bank or you buy bonds or you buy stocks, then you will, you know, get interest or you'll get compounding growth. And say that, you know, this may only happen over the course of many years, but the example is that it will grow quickly. And so they're engaged because they're going to give them a small amount of money, but it's kind of a neat exercise to go through with them. And each day you can physically do it. You know, you can place it in a jar or in a cup at breakfast time, which is what the author was talking about. And I also think that's a pretty clever way, as long as they're old enough to understand, they're not just thinking you're giving them money, but to try to show them, like, you know, think long term about this stuff.
And I like having it out and kind of part of the conversation on a daily basis, because it's a long-term skill and a long-term way of thinking that I think needs to be very concrete and anchored, especially for young children.
Right. And that's where the problem I have with like opening a bank account, and you're going to see numbers on a statement, and then you're going to see a number of interest that's added. And it's just so not real for a little kid to see that number on a printed bank statement. Whereas if we actually have it physically there in coins, which is something that kids understand, I think it's a more real way for them to see it.
They can see the jar grow bigger.
Yeah. Well, not the jar, but the coins.
Sorry. They can see the jar grow fuller, more full. I don't know. I can't talk today.
And on that note.
Wow. Save me from myself, please.
Feel like we've covered this one pretty well. And you actually have another ebook coming out on this exact topic.
Yeah, this is something that we've been talking about a lot and I've been thinking about a lot and just felt like enough material to finally write it all down and make it available. So stay tuned for that to come out in the next, I don't know, 4 weeks or so.
And the title of that's going to be something about raising entrepreneurial kids. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then this all ties into it.
Yep.
Very cool. So if you're interested in that ebook, that'll go on sale in the next few weeks. Go to zenfounder.com and sign up for our mailing list. And that'll be the first list to get notice when Sherry's puts the ebook on the market.
And all the patrons will always get a complimentary copy of ebooks and things like that. So you can also support the show through Patreon. And that's another way to stay abreast of what we're doing and also get some hookups on some of these things that we're working on.
Yep. And to support us on Patreon, go to supportzenfounder.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.